This is the Mizzou Sports Podcast, presented by the Columbia Daily Tribune.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Mizzou Sports Podcast, presented by the Columbia Daily Tribune. I am Mizzou Sports writer Daniel Jones, and with me is Cameron Teague Robinson. This is our first 2018 podcast, yeah. First post-holidays podcast.
I feel like we said this at the beginning of last time. It's been a while.
I know. The end of the year gets crazy with the travel, yeah, and with all the other commitments.
Yeah.
You went home to Cleveland for, yeah, Christmas. Got, yeah, to see the Browns finish out their season in the most Browns way possible.
I don't know if I'm happy or upset I wasn't in Cleveland when they went 0-16, because I was here in Columbia when they finished 0-16. But the 0-15 was like okay, because I was with my family and friends, and we ended up just like having a very good Christmas Eve party. That's how I put it that way. But 0-16 was just, I know that was kind of surreal. Like, I never imagined that would ever happen in my lifetime. I mean, I sat there after Corey Coleman dropped that surefire first down and was just frozen for about 45 minutes. And I was supposed to have New Year's Eve plans, and someone called me and was like, "Cam, where are you?" I was like, just sitting on my couch. I forgot. I'll be there in a little bit. It's just like, man, I was just, oh man, it was terrible.
Don't worry, I'll give you plenty of trouble about that, you know, in the future. Yeah. But there are times as like a third person kind of outside fan where you don't really want to like make fun. Like, there's some things you don't want to poke fun at immediately.
Yeah.
I had a friend who was from St. Louis, and a lot of local people can probably associate with this, but he was a huge Rams fan. When the Rams left St. Louis, it was like, you can't razz him about it now. That sucks.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Their hearts are ripped out of their chest.
There will come a time, probably pretty soon, when I feel comfortable razzing you about 0-16. I know our intern already has, our former intern.
I'm pretty cool with the Browns still, because I've lived with them. Mm-hmm. I don't like them from Steelers fans. Don't talk to me after the game. Like, don't text me if you're a Steelers fan after the game. I just didn't answer. Nick, who, if you listen to the podcast, you've seen him or you heard him on our podcast. He's our intern, but I just didn't reply to any text or tweets from him. But I'm pretty cool with Browns jokes, so it usually doesn't bug me. But, I mean, no one's harder on the Browns than me and my friends are, so.
Well, this was a historic season, Cam, so you
it'll
can take
a,
that.
It'll be a New Year's Eve I will absolutely never forget.
Yep, 0-16.
No amount of New Year's Eve partying could make me forget about that Browns loss.
At least it all happened in 2017. You can just leave 2017 behind.
Because the Browns are currently undefeated in 2018.
They are. They have not lost. We have a lot of Mizzou stuff to catch up on, too, including what just happened today on Friday. Today's the 4th, is that right?
I think so. It is. All these days are blurs.
Yeah, 5th. Today's the 5th. Yeah. Friday the 5th. What happened just about an hour and a half ago, Blake Harris transferred from the Mizzou basketball team.
Right.
Also later in this podcast, we'll talk a little bit about Mizzou's upcoming game against Florida. We'll recap a little bit about Mizzou football's play in the Texas Bowl last week. And then we'll also provide some updates on women's basketball, who lost their SEC opener last night, SEC home opener last night to LSU. It's their first home loss of the season and first home loss in almost a calendar year. So, anyway, we'll start with Blake Harris.
Yeah.
He's out.
Yeah.
Made the decision, I guess announced his decision today. He's transferring.
Right. It's pretty surprising.
I agree. I was pretty shocked.
Started 9 straight games. From the beginning of the Advocate Invitational against Long Beach State to the Bragging Rights game. 9 straight games he started.
Not only that, I mean, in the short term, it felt like he was had a fairly sizable role on this team, but definitely in the long term, it felt like he was the team's answer at point guard.
And I thought Illinois was his second half of the Illinois game was his best, like, 20 minutes Missouri Tiger.
Well, now it's his best 20 minutes ever as a Tiger.
I was shocked when we were in a meeting when the news came out, but I was shocked when we came back and heard and saw the news.
Yeah, it was surprising. I think the timing was surprising too, that it happened in the middle of the season when you kind of get into a point, now you're entering conference play and you're going to be expecting more out of him and everybody. But, I mean,
the day after he didn't start at South Carolina.
Right. It wasn't a C.J. Roberts situation. No. C.J. Roberts was being redshirted and didn't know where his place would be on the team this year or in the future. Right. I mean, at that point in time, C.J. Roberts was looking at a program that possibly was going to be led by Blake Harris for the next 2 to 3 years.
Right. Yep.
And then Blake Harris, given those keys, what you would expect, you know, okay, hey, Blake, we got point guards ahead of you, but they're older. Really, the only one at this point who's ahead of him, I would say, in the depth chart is Jordan Guice.
Right, exactly.
But he's a junior. You're a freshman. In a year, you could possibly take that starting job and make it your own. But anyway, it just seemed like really surprising.
Yeah, like you said, very surprising. This came all the way out of left field. No clue this was going to happen. Because, like you said, I thought Blake Harris is the best point guard. I mean, I think Jordan Guice is going to get I thought Jordan Guice would get the majority of the minutes going forward.
Yeah.
But that came out of nowhere.
So one thing about Blake Harris that can't be ignored is his connection with the Porters.
Yeah.
He was also a signee at Washington before Lorenzo Romar was fired. Then he got his release. I believe he actually got his release first. Then Michael got his release. But there is no doubt that Michael Porter going to Missouri was a huge reason why Blake Harris did too. Michael Porter pretty much like ran a whole recruiting trip for him in April
Kevin Knox trip.
Yeah. And so that was a huge deal on campus. Blake signed just right after that.
Right.
So definitely that relationship has been very close.
I wonder how much this has to do, if anything, to do with Mike not playing.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I don't know how that would affect it because, Mike's still around. I think they're roommates. I don't know how much time Mike stays there or stays at the Porter House because, he's on Instagram in a hot tub at the Porter House. I can't imagine he has a hot tub in his residence hall outside with a full basketball court.
That nice.
Right. But it's interesting right now. The connection to the Porters can't be forgotten. That's why he came to Missouri in the first place.
I don't know if you saw the Instagram post. There was remember the Instagram post that Blake Harris put up after the Illinois game, saying, "Now I know what it's all about next year."
Yeah.
Michael Porter commented, and then Jonte Porter, I saw this earlier today. I don't know when this comment was Jonte posted.
Commented too?
Yeah, it may have been after the game, or it may have been just recently, but Jonte's comment, at least what it appeared to be, was, "No more years for you," and it was tagged Blake Harris. So I don't know. That's kind of become a large part of our job, is deciphering social media posts and what they might mean, cryptic messages. So anyway, it's for Missouri. Now you have Jordan Guice and Terrence Phillips, your two point guards for the rest of the season.
Yeah, they already have point guard problems.
Right, and maybe Cassius Robertson, but go ahead.
Yeah, they already have point guard problems, even with Blake and Jordan Guice. I mean, those two had played well the last few games, but now you're turning the keys to the offense to Jordan Guice, who was, you can't even put it lightly, he was absolutely terrible against Illinois. He was very good against South Carolina, and it's just very up and down for Jordan Guice, and then you give it your backup point guard, Terrence Phillips, who has not been great this year. I mean, he's hit a few big shots. I want to say the UCF game, he had a few big shots. But he hasn't been very good this year. Your point guard problems just get worse. And for a team that's trying to make the NCAA tournament, that's going to play in a loaded SEC with some very good guards, one of them being Chris Chuiza from Florida, who's coming to town Saturday. It's not good. It's not a good time for Missouri to have to lose your first or second point guard.
Yeah. So I wonder if this means, you're going to have to roll with Jordan Guice.
Yeah, you have to.
And then Terrence Phillips is going to have to play a lot.
Yeah. I mean, even if you were to use Cassius as your point guard,
which that experiment I don't think worked out.
Well. And even if you did that, Terrence would still have to play because you got to give Cassius some time on the bench. Even though Cassius plays like 35 minutes a game, those are your two guys. Now you just got to, those are the guys you have now, and you got to roll with them. But I don't see how that bodes well for them right now.
Do you see them changing their style at all? I don't know if that would have any impact on that. I know Terrence Phillips last year played a lot more aggressive scoring role.
Right.
He probably felt like he had to score. He was the Tigers' best 3-point shooter last year at like 35%. I don't, do you, I don't know if that changes anything on what he feels like he needs to do or what Jordan Geis feels like he needs to do from the point guard position.
I think Jordan Geis' role would stay the same. Because he's been, he's played the most minutes of the three anyway this year. So I think his would stay the same. I don't think Terrence Phillips' role should come in and be a scorer. I mean, you don't need it on this team. I mean, that's surprising to say. Like, if you were to say that with beginning of the season, your idea would be like, oh, Mike's going to do all the scoring. But I mean, Jordan Barnett and Cassie Robinson have been tremendous.
Yeah.
I mean, Jontay Porter has been great. Jeremiah Tillman and Kevin Perry give it to you when they need it. So Terrence didn't have to come in and be a scorer. He's going to have to come in and just run the offense. He's going to have to use his speed similar to how Blake Harris did, but he just can't turn the ball over. He just makes some bad turnovers. Like the one before halftime where he just kicked the ball out of bounds. Bad turnover. Like the one against the Illinois game where he went up for a jump shot and landed. That's a middle school turnover.
That's a trip dome turnover.
Yeah.
I know because I've committed that one a couple times.
Right. He just can't turn the ball over. It's just going to come to a point where Terrence Phillips is going to have to be on the floor and just can't be bad for this team. I don't know. I don't think he comes in and is a scorer for this group. I just don't think that's his role with this team right now.
It's an interesting dynamic because at the beginning of the season, I think a lot of people looked at Terrence Phillips as an important guy on the roster.
Right.
Or maybe, you know, at the end of last season and when you started bringing in some more scorers, it's like, okay, well, Terrence, starting point guard from last year, his job's going to change into a distributor.
Right, right.
And a lot of people thought that he could be that guy because of his history, what he did at Oak Hill. That was kind of his role there.
Right.
But the job was not given to him. It was given to Jordan Geist and then Blake Harris and Cassius Robertson too.
Right. So it makes
Now I don't know. I don't know if that ability is in him or not. But like you said, the turnovers have to those have to go down for him to have a prominent role.
And I mean, you mentioned it. The one thing Terrence gives you that Blake didn't is the jump shot. I mean, teams, if you're going to play zone, I think Terrence will be a threat beyond the arc for them, and that's going to be a thing that will be nice to have off the bench because Blake just didn't do that. He wasn't a jump shooter. He was straight line guy. He's going to make a play. But Terrence is a guy who you can't really help off of because he's, like you say, he's a 35% shooter from deep. So that'd be a positive. It's just, again, turnovers have to go down.
Right. We kind of talked a little bit about what Missouri, I mean, you've been pretty strongly convicted that they're a tournament team without Michael Porter. How much does this change your outlook on the rest of the season?
I think they're, honestly, I don't know now. I mean, honestly, you're looking at a team who already have point guard struggles, and now you have even more. I don't think they're a tournament team without Blake Harris. And that's not to say Blake Harris was tremendous. That's just to say now the only one point guard I feel like you can trust is Jordan Geist. And that's never good. I mean, not Jordan Geist, but like to trust one point guard. Like I feel like you could trust Jordan Geist. That's not a bad thing. But like any team who wants to be an NCAA tournament team, I feel like you need to have one or two point guards, at least two point guards you can trust. I think Cassius down the stretch is going to be the guy who has the ball regardless. He's going to bring in the ball no matter what point guard's in the game.
Undoubtedly, his best role is as an off-the-ball shooter.
Correct. I agree. It's just, I don't know. I think we're going to have to see what we get from Terrence Phillips before I can say, oh, this team's an NCAA tournament team, because what we've seen from him so far has not been great.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, when you cut a point guard position that's already been kind of up and down in half, it's tough to see them picking up some of these big wins in the SEC. And the SEC is no joke this year. If it was last year's SEC or the year before, maybe. But this SEC is no joke this year. They're legitimately eight deep.
One of Missouri's biggest conference games is Saturday at noon at Mizzou Arena against Florida.
It's going to be tough enough with Blake Harris.
Right. And Florida has been a confusing team this year because at times they've looked like one of the 10 best teams in the country. They had Duke up against the ropes at the PK80.
Yep.
Yeah, up in Portland. And, their guards they have some of the best guards in the league. Of course, went to the Elite Eight last year. But then after they lost that game to Duke, things fell apart for them. They lost to Loyola.
Yeah, I think they lost to Florida State in there somewhere.
Right, so they kind of went through this lull. And then just recently, they've picked it back up. Now they're 2-0 in the league, just beat Texas A&M handily.
Yeah.
Of course, Texas A&M was missing a lot of their big guys. But
right.
What do you make of this Florida team? You say it's going to be tough with Coach Joiza. How good are the Gators?
Very good. I mean, they just have so many scoring threats. And Joiza is he's a perfect playmaker for them. Senior guard, experienced. He's averaging like something like eight some assists a game or something like that. I don't know. Something like that. But he's leading the SEC in assists. He's second in assists per game. Mm-hmm. He's averaging, well, against Texas A&M, he had 12 points and 9 assists. He's averaging 13 points a game. So he's a scorer and a playmaker for them. I think he's gonna be huge. I mean, you're talking about going into a game where now Missouri has even more questions at point guard. He's probably sitting there like, oh, yeah, I'm excited.
And licking his chops. Yeah,
exactly. That's the guy you have to slow down. But they have scores all over the floor. The big thing for Missouri, or I guess the positive point, is that John, I can't pronounce his name.
Egbunu
is still not back from his ACL tear last
year. Big guy.
Big guy, yeah. So Missouri will have a little bit of size in the post with them, but it's not going to be easy. This is a Florida team who, I mean, you picked them to win the SEC this year.
I did.
They're beginning of the year, they were a team people thought could go to the Final Four.
Yeah.
So this won't be an easy game. It's going to be a tough one for them. And I mean, and the big thing for them is that, I mean, Missouri and Florida both shoot a ton of threes. I was looking at this the other day in the airport. Missouri and Florida tied for the SEC lead in three-pointers made.
Mm-hmm.
Florida shot one less than them, so they have a higher percentage. That's enough. They're both top 50 in the country in threes. They're going to see a lot of shots taken in this game.
So is this game going to just come down to who's hot on Saturday,
Or who stops the other? And I think, I mean, you lean Florida because their defense has proven that it's been a little bit better than Missouri's this year. Missouri's defense has shown at times that they can be very, very good. I mean, at the beginning of the season, we were like, this could be one of the best Missouri defenses in a long time. But lately, hasn't been that way.
No.
And it wasn't that way late against South Carolina. At that point, like, I had written something in my story, just like preparing, this is Missouri's best defensive performance since blah, blah. Because South Carolina had like 30-some points with like 8 minutes left. And I was like, what in the world? And then South Carolina just goes off, and you're like, oh, there it is.
Yeah.
So I think it just comes down to which team is able to run the other off the three-point line a little bit better.
It hasn't been the kind of team that I think that I expected Konzo Martin to field. A team that shoots a lot of threes and has struggled on defense.
Right.
And I think part of that is because they don't have the guards to defend. Who would you say is their best defensive guard?
Jordan Geis? I mean, Jordan Geis, probably Cassius Robertson?
Maybe Cassius, yeah. I don't know. I mean, but that's kind of been a deficiency. They don't guard very well on the perimeter.
Right.
Jeremiah Tillman and Jonte Porter give you a lot inside, around the basket when they're not fouling. But, yeah, the defense hasn't really caught up, and I would say is not at typical Konzo Martin levels. We'll see on Saturday how it matches up against Florida, which has some of the best guards, in the league.
And Konzo mentioned that after the South Carolina game about, like, this is the first time he's really kind of had to change his coaching philosophy into focusing on the three ball because this group can shoot the ball so well.
Yeah.
And he brought up something that I think he mentioned it after the Kansas game, that the defense was going to take some time because they focus so heavily on offense, especially in practice and changing things around. But eventually the defense has to come around. I mean, it's going to be January 6th. You're playing one. And, I mean, Florida may not be a ranked team right now. That talent is top 10, top 15 talent.
Yeah.
This isn't an unranked SEC team. So the defense has got to come around soon. Doesn't help Blake Harris is gone. Saturday's going to be tough for this group.
Yeah. And then right after that, they host again midweek next week. Who do they play next week?
I'm shaking my head until I...
They are playing at home.
Yeah, they are
at home,
though.
It's a big weekend for Missouri hoops.
Georgia
comes to town next week for the men.
To Arkansas next week. Next weekend.
So this is a big weekend for Mizzou because they host Florida on Saturday. Game will be on CBS, so it'll be a big audience. And then on Sunday, the women's basketball team will host South Carolina, which is a defending national champion. And we'll just... I was at the game last night. Mizzou lost 69-65 to LSU. Offense, Mizzou came out of the gate and the first possession lasted almost 100. It was like 100 seconds. It took forever.
Right.
So they kept getting offensive rebounds and yet didn't score on the possession. And that was kind of like the entire first half. Mizzou's possessions were going 25, 26, 27 seconds. And they weren't getting good shots. Just really timid. LSU kind of had this full court trap that they were playing and then a matchup zone. And as soon as Mizzou would cross the timeline, it was like everything would just stop. Right. And so then the shot clock goes down to like 15, and you're trying to get the ball around the perimeter to get an entry pass, and that wasn't happening. And so with 5 seconds on the shot clock,
you got to hoist a shot.
Yeah, Lauren Aldridge and Amber Smith were just checking up shots. And
you think
so,
that's because Sophie wasn't there?
Well, it was kind of interesting, maybe a little bit. I think if you had Sophie there, you could get the ball in her hands and she could start making some plays.
Right.
Nobody did that in the first half, and the second quarter really got away from the Tigers and ended up basically losing them the game. They got outscored by 15 points in the second quarter. In the second half, things changed. It was just a lot more aggressive. As soon as Mizzou would get across the timeline, they would continue to move towards the basket. And what Robin Pinchton said after the game was she took some of the blame for the way Mizzou played. She said, "I think I got them too focused on taking care of the ball." And Mizzou, the women's team, one of their biggest problems over the last 2 to 3 years, even with a really talented program, has been turnovers. So maybe that just got in their head a little too much. In the second half, they did play totally different. They were attacking the basket. They were getting good looks. And Amber Smith had 16 points in the fourth quarter to finish with 27. So she was really, really good, but it was just too much to overcome late. Yeah. So anyway, that was a rough loss for the Tigers. They're now 13-2.
Yeah. With South Carolina coming, you'd think Sophie would play Sunday. If it's not too bad, I'd imagine. I know they have her listed as day to day, but you'd think like sit her for LSU, make sure she's healthy for South Carolina, because that's the biggest test they'll have this year.
Yeah. What Robin Pinchon said after the game, that she wasn't yet cleared to play. So I think that was the question was, are you guys, were you trying to just kind of get her ready for South Carolina? Mm-hmm. She wasn't cleared to play, but yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe it was a more conservative approach to make sure she's ready to go. She looks healthy, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you're ready to go,
right,
you know, play Division I basketball. She was on the bench last night, so she'd be a huge boost. I mean, she's the fifth leading scorer in the conference. So,
All-American.
Yeah, absolutely. So, that'll be big for the women, is getting Sophie Cunningham back. But, I think they kind of have to find that balance of aggression and control.
Right.
Because like the men, they can be really aggressive, but they can also just lose control sometimes to their detriment. So that's something that both programs share, is that balance and trying to figure it out.
Really quick, before we go to Mizzou football, I want to touch on this for Mizzou basketball. Now it's Blake Harris gone. You absolutely need a point guard in this recruiting class.
Missouri
currently does not have one. I imagine they're going to go after a few, but if you're at Missouri, you have to go all in on Courtney Ramey. Now, I don't know how this has changed since Blake Harris thing, since it just happened an hour and a half ago, but everything I've heard about Courtney Ramey says that there's not much of a chance he comes here.
Right.
But, I mean, the two-point guards that I know that they have offered in this next class, the Tyre Campbell from Iowa, Indiana, somewhere, one of those two, and Courtney Ramey, both top 100 kids. I'm not sure how much of a chance there is for them to get either of them. So they need a point guard in this class, regardless of what star they are.
Right.
You need a young point guard for this class. Even if you want to start Jordan Geist next year as a senior, or you want to start Terrence Phillips next year, you need a young point guard to come in here. That has to be our priority for this group going forward.
Mm-hmm. Yep. 100%. Okay, quickly on MU football.
Yep.
Recap the Texas Bowl. Houston was cold and rainy. The weather was better there than it was in Missouri, where it was -5 and -8.
Yeah.
On the field, Mizzou came out ultra conservative. Basically, we're hamstringed by Texas's incredible punter, Michael Dixon.
MVP Michael Dixon.
MVP, that's right. Yeah. I don't know if it was Joe John Finley was calling the plays for the first time. I don't know if he felt like he didn't want Drew Locke throwing deep balls from, you know, the 10-yard line or whatever it was. But Missouri is just adverse to taking risks. And that is not how their offense succeeds. Yeah. I know they spent, you know, the last half of the season using the run to kind of get their big plays going. Ishwitter and Larry Roundtree were really, really good over the last couple weeks of the season, and that opens up a lot. But Texas was pretty committed to playing light in the box and heavy deep, and the Missouri still never got the run going.
Right.
They completed the one deep ball to Jonathan Johnson, but didn't really even test it. much more than that. Emmanuel Hall didn't play very much. He had a hamstring injury. Demaryius Crockett warmed up, was in pads before the game, did everything. You know, we were right there watching him warm up. He did everything pregame, and then right before the game, came back out onto the sideline in sweatpants. So I guess didn't want to risk it with Demaryius Crockett.
Right.
Anyway, it was a frustrating night if you're a fan of Missouri, because the offense just didn't go anywhere. Didn't look like Drew Locke was given – for me, it didn't look like they gave him the keys. They just kind of were, okay, we'll get to you. We need to get some breathing room, but they never did. And so Drew Locke never really had a chance to put a big impact on the game.
Right.
So frustrating if you're a fan of Missouri to end with a loss to Texas after such a great second half of the season. But – so it goes, and now Missouri is still waiting, I guess not waiting necessarily, but they're still looking for an offensive coordinator as of this taping. The one that's kind of been linked more than any other at this point is Jed Fish, who comes from UCLA, was the offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach there, also has been an NFL offensive coordinator.
It'd be a nice spot for them, especially considering.
I think a hire like that would be very good for Missouri.
And Drew Locke would love it.
And Drew Locke, before the Texas Bowl, said that he hadn't made a decision on whether he was going to leave or stay, you know, go to the NFL draft or stay at Missouri. But whoever Mizzou hired as an offensive coordinator would factor into that decision. He kind of made these vague comments. Right. Well, I guess not vague, but you would assume he's talking about Fish. He says if they bring in a guy who's been in the NFL, knows what NFL, right, you know, teams
and
are looking for.
Coaching top.
Exactly.
And
Josh Rosen, yeah. So it seemed like Drew was kind of campaigning for if not him, somebody with his kind of pedigree.
Right.
And we're still waiting on that decision, too.
Right.
Speaking
of Rosen, you're talking about Rosen, talking about the quarterback class. Rosen, Darnold, Lamar Jackson, Baker, Josh Allen. Like a messy one. That's five. The top five.
Those are the top five. Yeah.
I mean, those five all come out. I imagine you think Drew's. It would make sense for Drew to stay.
I agree. Yeah. Especially he got his draft grade back and it was stay in school. That doesn't take into consideration the other quarterbacks in the class.
Right.
So you have to add that. You have to put two and two together yourself.
Right.
Okay. They're telling me this. And here's the quarterback class.
And all five of those guys are, I mean, you're talking about first, second round guys. I mean, really first round guys.
Right.
And that Drew Locke 100% is behind those five as of now. I think Drew Locke comes back. I think he has a really solid chance of being a first round pick next year.
I think it's possible, too. It's hard to know exactly what's going through his mind.
Right.
If he's heard information from other people that would give him that think he would have a chance to leapfrog some of those guys.
Right.
But it would make a lot of sense that he would come back next year.
He hasn't given a timeline on his announcement.
No, he said he was going to give it a couple weeks after the bowl game. And I think that the offensive coordinator will be announced first before Drew Locke will make his decision.
Cool.
So that's kind of where we're at on that. It doesn't seem like his best chances are for this year, but again, I mean, he could have information coming from other places that would refute that. But from everything that we've heard, I think it'd be a tough quarterback class to join in at this point.
I agree.
Some other Mizzou football news. Jamon Moore was invited to the NFL Combine and will participate in that. He got an opportunity to play in Houston at the bowl game where he's from originally. So kind of a cool way for a really, really stellar Missouri receiver over his career and where he stacks up in program history to finish things out. Some people I've talked to about Jamon Moore think that he could get drafted maybe second or third day this year.
I thought you were going to say second or third round.
That would have been pretty impressive. But
you should have seen my eyes light up.
Yeah, second or third round guy just because of his makeup and how big he is, how fast he is.
Yeah.
He's got a great frame.
Right. He's got all the physical and talents.
Right, for an NFL wide receiver. So that that's something to kind of watch out for is his NFL future as well.
I imagine the hands are something that are putting a few.
I'm sure. That's kind of been something that's plagued him throughout his Missouri career. And I don't know if that's something NFL teams look at and say, I don't know if that's something we can ever fix. Right. Or if they see it and say, if we put our guys on it, maybe they'll fix it.
Give him some sticky gloves. That'd be good.
Yeah, like the replacements. Put some whatever it is, stick them on his gloves. Yep. Yeah. Okay. Recommendation of the week time. You said you're pretty excited about it. I think I know what you're going to talk
about. This.
You're wearing a nice little shiny new toy on your left wrist. Right wrist.
Everybody knows I'm Team Apple all day, every day. So I got home for Christmas, and you know, Mom just opened Christmas gifts whenever we want to. It's not really, it's just me and her, so it's whatever. And it was actually funny. 2 days before then, I was at Verizon getting some accessories on my phone, and I saw an Apple Watch, and I was like, I'm going to take a picture of it, send it to her. So I'm buy this here in a few months. And she's like, and I'm also trying to get a new car. She's like, get a car first. We'll wait on the Apple Watch. I'm like, all right, whatever. Blah, 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 blah. And in my mind, I'm like, I'm going to get this Apple Watch in 2 months. So I get home, and that Apple Watch is just sitting underneath the tree.
Unwrapped?
No, it was wrapped. It was like, she always tries to play jokes. She puts it like in a huge box. She puts a pillow in it, thinking that like when I open it, I'm going to see a pillow and not the Apple Watch. But I opened it on the other side. On accident, like I didn't even know. I just opened it, and there was just the Apple Watch.
Yeah, you ruined the surprise.
But yeah, I was freaking out, man. I've been wanting Apple Watch for a while. So this is the, I'm in the Series 3, which came out like a few months ago. I was watching the Apple reveal in like August or September.
That guy.
Oh yeah, 100%. And I was
insufferable.
Like, I was like, dude, this Apple Watch is sweet. It's awesome. It's my alarm clock. It's my obviously my watch. I get all my texts to it. I can call you right now from my Apple Watch if I wanted to.
Oh, you know what? I can call you from my cell phone that I keep in my pocket.
Listen, everywhere I go. But it helps because on New Year's Day I left my phone charger at my friend's house on New Year's Eve.
Uh-huh.
My phone was dead, so I was like, and I didn't remember how to get back there. I was like, how am I going to get back there? So I texted a friend of mine from my watch. I said, hey, send me your address. GPSed it from my watch. Called him when I was outside from my watch. Got my charger. Charged my phone. Boom. Apple Watch saves the day.
So are you going to keep your iPhone?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%. Because you can link, everything is linked from your iPhone to your Apple Watch. So you can do different things. Like my exercise stuff is on my watch. It's awesome. It's the greatest thing ever. I love it. I used to be able to leave my phone like in my room anyway because I would get texts to my computer. But now I get phone calls to my watch. I definitely don't need my phone like on me at all times.
You realize this means you will never leave the grid ever.
That's fine.
Are you okay with this?
Yeah, that's fine. I'm Team Apple all day. Now, all I need are some AirPods, the Apple Bluetooth headphones. I tried a friend of mine's one time, and like, it fell right out of my ear, so I'm like terrified of those because I'll like get on an airplane and like go to sleep and just gone. But so I probably won't get those. But
I think Apple designs things to break and or get lost as easily as possible, and then they'll charge you $100 to replace it.
That's because they're awesome, and you need them to survive. Mm. Apple all day, every day. All day, every day. And it was funny because the second I got, everybody knows how Danny feels about me and my Apple my elitism. So when I got my Apple Watch, the first thing I did was take a picture, send it to Danny. I was like, this is going to be awesome.
I'm glad that got to take your mind off the Browns for a little bit.
Yeah, it's okay.
Speaking of football, my Chiefs are playing in the playoffs on Saturday.
Yeah.
So right after the Mizzou basketball game, as a matter of fact. So I don't know if I have a good recommendation of the week, but I'll be keeping my eyes on that.
Is it to watch the Chiefs destroy the Titans?
Hopefully.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. Yeah. I don't know. So maybe my recommendation will be for some like anti-stress, like a stress ball, or something. Yeah. To watch.
Use a stress ball while you watch Mizzou, Florida, and then get another one for the Chiefs game versus the Titans.
Because we've experienced football in different agonizing ways.
Yeah.
You've kind of been through the raw misery of horrible seasons.
Yeah.
And I've kind of been through promising seasons that have ended in misery.
Right, yeah.
Unfulfilled potential.
Right, and I don't know which one's worse. People have had this conversation with a lot of people. I don't know if... At least for me, like I'm for the Browns, it's just like once they suck so bad, start the season, you're like, whatever, we suck, it's over.
You kind of accept your fate,
right? For you guys, it's like your hopes are up.
Yeah,
I mean, you start high, you're bad in the middle, you end on a pretty good note, and now you're in the postseason.
So I imagine your hopes are very high right now.
I'd be curious. I don't know. Maybe it's just because we're kind of set in our ways. The Chiefs have been that way for a long time, and the Browns have been that way for a long time.
The only thing with the Browns is that like they're like the joke of every sport. Everyone
they
has Browns jokes.
They have become the punchline of every sport. Yeah.
And that's
if you're bad at what you do in sports, you're the Browns.
Yeah, exactly. And that's probably the hardest part about being a Browns fan. Like if we were just like the Jets or like the Lions.
Even like the Jaguars were that for a long time, and you've like rustled that.
Yeah, I remember the last Browns game I went to. They beat the Jaguars. That was back when the Jags were terrible, and everybody left like very happy. I'm not going to say what we were talking about because that'll be an embarrassment to Browns fans. But
I'm guessing Super Bowl.
There are a lot of Super Bowl chants. But I mean the Jags are a very good example of turning things around.
Just watch and learn.
Yeah,
that's what you got to do.
Exactly.
All right, I think we'll wrap this up.
Cool.
Big Mizzou basketball game tomorrow. Big women's basketball game on Sunday. We'll have coverage in the paper. We can do a podcast after the game if you want. We can. Chiefs game will be on. My attention will be divided.
What time did Chiefs start?
3:00. So my attention will be divided. But
probably do like a halftime or something.
We could do it after the game. Okay. I could be professional.
Okay.
I could be professional.
Okay. I mean, you could just watch it on TV. That's up there on the media, bro.
I plan to. But we'll have all the coverage.
Sit next to Gabe. You ain't Gabe.
My Chiefs fandom is easily outstripped by Gabe Bjarman. Yeah. He is a very vocal Chiefs fan.
Yeah. All right, people.
Well, we'll have coverage of Mizzou's basketball games this weekend on ColumbiaTribune.com, our website, and in the paper. You can follow us on Twitter at CJ_Teague and Daniel_M_Jones. Thanks for listening to our podcast. You can subscribe at any time, and we'll have more content, #content, coming out in the next couple days. Thanks for listening.
Subscribe to Mizzou's Sports Podcast at iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher.